Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated, a weekly roundup of the who's who and the what's what in the arts and culture scene here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio's arts and culture reporter. Each week, we'll bring you conversations and stories about notable happenings in our little slice of the world. Today on Curated, we speak with the executive producer of the ABC show, Fresh Off the Boat.
Well, everybody at some point has felt like an outsider. It's not, maybe not at the same time, obviously, but like, you know, everyone knows what it feels like to be the new kid in school. Everyone knows what it feels like to be the new family in the neighborhood.
We meet the daughter of one of the greatest singers alive.
No amount of me sitting around lamenting the fact that they had done such big things in their life was going to get me closer to my goal, right? So I just lived my life, and I really believe my siblings have done the same.
We go inside Theater Aspen's production of Mamma Mia, and we hear from author Maria Semple.
I mean, honestly, I've never taken a writing class, so I just don't even know what people teach in writing classes, but I teach only story and how to build a novel into a compelling story with strong characters and drives and motivations. It's really screenwriting tricks overlaid onto novel writing.
All of that, plus our song of the week, and as always, the week in the arts. A quick rundown of the top things to see, hear, and experience this week in the Valley. That's all coming up on Curated from Aspen Public Radio News.
Yesterday was your birthday. Happy birthday.
ABC's Fresh Off the Boat tells the story of an Asian American family who moves to Orlando to run a restaurant chain. The story is based on the memoir of Eddie Wong, the show's executive producer. Melvin Marr is Chinese American, and he's participating in the Aspen Ideas Festival on a panel about how immigrants are represented in art. I spoke with him last week about his show and how Asian Americans are making more appearances in the film industry. I wonder what it's like trying to represent someone's life on television. The television show Fresh Off the Boat is based off a memoir of the same title.
The TV show is inspired by the memoir. And the great thing that we've sort of done here is, because it's inspired, we have taken the book as a jumping off point and have brought in, you know, other stories from the writers that come in, the filmmakers that come in, and even some of the actors that come in to sort of craft the television show. You know, I like to say that we boast the most diverse writers' room on television. You know, there's it's a sort of literally a United Nations, you know, United Colors of Benetton ad when it comes to our writers' room. And I think that is, you know, really a huge part of the strength of the show.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you how the backgrounds of the people on the writing staff influence what comes out on and ends up on the screen.
Well, you know, when we first set out to make this, we didn't set out to make a show for Asian people. It was a show for everybody through the point of view of an Asian American family or a Chinese American family. And when I, you know, first approached Ninochka Khan about doing it, and, you know, she's not Chinese or Taiwanese or even Asian, she's Persian American. And we started talking about what the show would be and what the strengths of it would be. And we sort of boiled it down to, you know, the thing that I think everyone relates to, which is like feeling like an outsider or feeling like they don't belong someplace. And from that point on, we sort of expanded outwards and, you know, it became a show about the immigrant experience and, you know, sticking with the authenticity of the fact that we have a Chinese Taiwanese family. So, you know, we have, you know, a bunch of writers that are from Chinese Taiwanese descent. We also have, you know, other Asian writers from Korean descent as well as Indian descent. And it's just, it's kind of a cool, like, salad of people, you know, and everybody sort of brings in, like, a story that we, you know, find a way to sort of put into the show. You know, it's that very universal feeling of, you know, feeling like you don't belong someplace, like a fish out of water, you know?
Like you said, in trying to make this show for everyone, I wonder what sort of challenge, I guess, in trying to write a story about feeling like outsiders for everyone seems kind of like this funny balance, you know?
Well, everybody at some point has felt like an outsider. It's not, maybe not at the same time, obviously, but like, you know, everyone knows what it feels like to be the new kid in school. Everyone knows what it feels like to be the new family in the neighborhood, you know? And it's that's a universal feeling, I think, no matter who you talk to, whether it's people of different ethnicities or backgrounds, everyone understands that. And that's sort of the main premise of the show. And I think, you know, the thing that makes it kind of interesting and you know, groundbreaking is that it's through the prism of a Chinese American family.
And you're Chinese American yourself. I wonder, how much of yourself do you see in the show?
I see a lot of it. It's like a weird form of therapy. You know, it's kind of a cool, like, I just never thought that I would, you know, be a part of something like this where, you know, you grow up as a minority in this country and you sort of think like no one's going to understand the weirdness of your family. And what this, you know, what this project has sort of done is like link a bunch of people that have that, you know, all the writers come in with that, all the directors come in with that. And it was just sort of, we started sharing stories about like how our families are so completely strange.
And the show has been received really well, lots of critical acclaim. But at the same time, I wonder what's it like to write this show in an environment, in the current political climate, where there's lots of anti-immigrant sentiment.
You know, I have, in a very sort of, you know, it's funny, you sort of watch these sort of Donald Trump rallies, or you like read about them, and there's this sort of anti-immigrant sentiment, like you're saying, and it just sort of like motivates you even more. You know, there's you suddenly sort of feel like, wow, this is a really good moment for our show. And it's very important that we keep on doing good work and putting this out there, because it just sort of shows that there's a whole segment of the population that just hasn't been exposed to this. You know, I don't think of it in a negative way. I'm actually think of it in a positive way, where it's an opportunity, you know?
And you're coming to the Aspen Ideas Festival to talk about the immigrant experience in media and in art. And mm-hmm. I wonder what you hope happens or comes of that discussion that you're going to be a part of.
Well, I hope it sort of frames it in, you know, in a way that shows that this is a good thing that should continue. You know, I think diverse voices in television, in media, in the arts, in film, and whatever just needs to happen. And it's starting to happen in a really cool way. And we should keep doing it. We should keep pushing towards it.
And you touched on one of the last things I want to talk about. There's obviously a big discussion right now in Hollywood and in the film industry. For example, the Oscars So White hashtag mm-hmm. that's circulated. I wonder if it's easier to make diversity happen in television or film. Which one, I guess, is it easier to happen in?
You know, the television side of things is just really exciting. You know, it just, and, you know, a lot of people have been sort of crediting Fresh Off the Boat with, you know, aiding that when it comes to Asian Americans on TV. And, you know, it's very flattering and it's very cool. And I just, I hope it just sort of continues and it doesn't, it's not just a novelty. I mean, at the same time, you know, on the film side of things, like, things are starting to change, and I know it's sometimes it looks like it's a giant bummer, but you know, being part of those discussions these days when it comes to how you're, you know, what you, who you need to cast or what you need to do to make your movie open, you know, it's always a complicated conversation. But I think, you know, people are seeing that diversity is a thing that actually helps the bottom line, you know, And it's happening slowly. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it's happening quick enough, but I do think it's happening.
All right. Melvin Marr, executive producer of Fresh Off the Boat. Thank you very much for speaking with me today.
No worries. Thank you.
That was Melvin Marr, executive producer of Fresh Off the Boat. You're listening to Curated from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Patrick Ford. Follow Aspen Public Radio on Twitter or Instagram, or like us on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter at Patrick B. Fort. Theater Aspen's Mamma Mia opens today. One member of the cast was in the original Broadway production. This summer, the show has a much deeper meaning for him. When Mark Price was performing in the original cast of Mamma Mia on Broadway, he was going through a challenging time in his life.
It was a very unique time. It was a very interesting time, and it was a very complicated time for New Yorkers in general.
It was right after 9/11, and to go on top of that, Price was dealing with a death in the family. The peppy songs of ABBA that he was singing night in and night out on the Broadway stage were far from what he needed at that point. It took him years to see the show after he left the cast. It was then that he could see what was so appealing about the musical.
And I remember thinking, wow, like seeing the show was a totally different experience for me. It was the first time I could really take in like how joyful and how fun the show was.
Mamma Mia, here I go again. My, how can I resist you?
Price originated the role of Pepper, but now he plays Harry, one of three potential fathers of a bride-to-be who are invited to her wedding without the knowledge or permission of her mother. Price has aged since he performed in the show, and he's changed. Like any book or song, the meaning you get out of it changes as time passes too.
I think now, doing this show 14 years later, my capacity for joy and fun is like through the roof now. I'm not sort of like tormented by so many tragic events. So it really is a gift to be able to really, really just relish in the fun.
He says his role this time around is one that fits his personality more. When he was in the show 14 years ago, the script felt a bit soft. But now, because of that capacity for joy, he says he has, he understands it more. It doesn't feel as soft.
So I think when you have a subject like joy, when you have a topic like fun, and the themes that are in this show, identity, family, families that you choose versus the families that you're born into, you know, like people are going to have different takes on that. And so I think that's why it encompasses just such a wide variety of interpretations.
If you missed part of today's show, go online to aspenpublicradio.org, where you can subscribe to the Curated podcast. Maria Semple is an award-winning novelist and former television writer whose credits include Mad About You, Suddenly Susan, and Arrested Development. Semple was in Aspen to teach a fiction workshop for Aspen Words. She spoke to Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Heldman about her experiences teaching writing.
My background is television, and for 15 years, I was every day it was called breaking stories, and we would break stories up on the whiteboard and do story beats. And you have to be really ruthless about what's a scene, what's a story, does this move the story forward? And I felt like I developed this really strong muscle for that when I go into the world of fiction, it's kind of amazing how little about that people know. And so when I teach, I really don't teach sentences or paragraphs, or I mean, honestly, I've never taken a writing class, so I just don't even know what people teach in writing classes. But I teach only story and how to build a novel into a compelling story with strong characters and drives and motivations. It's really screenwriting tricks overlaid onto novel writing.
So you're doing that right now at Aspen Words. And are people coming to you and they'll say, okay, here's my character and this is what's happening, and you help format it or change it or give them new ideas?
Yeah, I think it must be what it's like to get up in front of the Supreme Court, because they tell me about their characters and I just start hitting them with all these questions and basically harass them and badger them about, is there enough motivation? What do they want? What is your character afraid of? Who's the antagonist? And I really try to get them thinking in terms of how to write a compelling story. And another way of saying that is how to have a compelling main character, which I think are one and the same. And I think that the idea of story is very intimidating. I look at these people in my workshop, and I have 11 students. And as soon as I even talk about story, I think they all get this, they get afraid. They think, wait, I never learned that. I don't know what that is. I missed the memo. And the thing is, everyone's kind of missed the memo, except actually for me, who worked in TV for 15 years. But aside from me, the thing is once you really start talking about story, it feels very technical and like this other world that how could somebody learn that or know what that is? So I try to kind of put that aside and say, let's just talk about a character. And what does the character want? And are they willful? And are they taking actions to get what they want? And so that really helps people to just put all the talk of plotting and story aside, because there are books that teach that, but it's all graphs and charts and it confuses me. And just to boil it down to, what do they want? How far are they going to go to get it? What's getting in their way? And at first, I think everyone slightly looks down on me because they think, oh, we're not writing John le Carré here. I'm writing a small story, you know, about an orphanage in Guatemala. But the thing is, all those principles have to apply to the smallest book.
To make it true.
Yes, to make it true, and just to make the person want to keep, your reader want to keep turning the pages. And so that's all I'm trying to do, is get them to write books that people are going to want to get to the end of.
It's not dissimilar to what I would imagine an actor would do with developing a character in order to play that person, whether it be on television or in a movie, finding some motivation and some backstory.
Well, that's a really good point, because I actually, a lot of this stuff I learned, and I still apply it to novel writing, is, in fact, I just finished a new novel, and as I was writing it, I would find that I would go into my boyfriend's office. His name is George Meyer. He's a TV writer as well. And sometimes I would be working on a scene or a part of the book, and I would be kind of confused about what was going on, and I would actually find myself saying the words, I don't know what the actress is playing. And it's not because I am imagining this being a movie. It's because I really remember, and particularly on the show Mad About You with Helen Hunt, who's really a wonderful, very serious actress. And we would write these, you know, scripts for her, and she would come into the writer's room and say, I don't know what I'm playing in this scene. And I'd say, oh, well, you want to get to the play on time, but you're also worried that your mother hasn't called and maybe something's wrong with her, and also the souffle has to be put in the oven at 6. And she would just go, what? Like, are you kidding me? Like, how do I play that? And so, and she would call it, I feel like I'm chasing 3 rabbits. I'm chasing a bunch of bunnies. And that really became an indelible image for me, because even when you're writing novels, I don't care what it is, you really need to write one thing, which is not to say that there can't be dread and regret and kind of undercurrents of not wanting to do the one thing, you know, that you have to have a pure motivation. Right now, I'm happy to be here. I'm also nervous. I'm also worried I'm going to self-sabotage, you know, what, say too much, start bad-mouthing Helen Hunt, you know, so I'm now, there's all these other things going on right now. But basically, I'm now, the actress right now is playing the scene that I want to give a good radio interview.
Semple's third novel, Today Will Be Different, will be released this fall. You can hear the full conversation on Cross Currents next Wednesday, July 6th at 3:30. Diana Ross performed at the Jazz Aspen June Experience on Friday. Her daughter, Rhonda, is also a singer. Rhonda opened for Diana, a performance characterized by Jazz Aspen Snowmass founder Jim Horowitz, as one of the all-time best in the festival's history. I spoke with Rhonda last week. Rhonda Ross was born in 1971, and she had what she says was a very normal, but also very extraordinary childhood.
We traveled everywhere and all the time. We had wonderful support in our home. We had, you know, nannies and cooks and chauffeurs and all of that stuff.
There were boarding schools in Europe, vacations to lakes and beaches. The normal came during every moment Rhonda's mother, Diana, was around. She never missed Christmas, never missed birthdays. Rhonda says her mother's main goal was to provide for her children.
She just allowed us to have a perspective on the world and experiences that she never had.
All of those perspectives and experiences allowed Rhonda to become what she is today, what she calls a social artist. She makes art that she wants to be affecting and force people to think. It isn't what all people make art for, she says. Sometimes it's art for art's sake. It's the wrong song, it's the wrong style. Rhonda got her start as a singer in college when she realized that jazz music was what really spoke to her. That's Rhonda singing in 1992, after being introduced by her mother.
Jazz, at its core, is a social art. It was created for the expression of the human spirit. It was created to talk about what was going on in the world and in the environment, as well as people's individual responses to it.
Rhonda's a fan of Billie Holiday and grew up appreciating how the singer was able to use her voice to express the feelings of people across the world. Jazz spoke to her like it did to Rhonda. Looking back, Rhonda says her favorite part of her mother's performances were when she'd sing Billie Holiday. Rhonda says she never felt like she was in the shadow of her mother.
She raised five children to believe that we had value outside of being her children, that we had value just by being human beings, that we had perspectives that were worthy of sharing.
And even when asked if it's annoying or obnoxious maybe to be asked about her all the time, she says she doesn't get bothered by talking about who her mother is.
I'm so used to just being around her and, you know, just kind of being with her. But every now and then I step back and think, oh, my goodness, look who this is. Because she's so comfortable to be around you, you sort of can forget momentarily.
Because she says her entire childhood was focused on making sure that she and her siblings were able to achieve their dreams. And there was no pressure to act a certain way, to think a certain way, to make sure that you were always perfect for the cameras. But now the cameras are on her, literally. Rhonda has done some acting and will open for her mother at the Jazz Aspen June Experience. Rhonda usually played in small clubs, but she added elements of rock and gospel to her music. Diana started listening.
She took notice and invited me to do a couple, you know, a few minutes on her shows. And the first time we did it was in 2013, and then maybe three different times in 2014.
And now over the course of 6 weeks this summer. Rhonda says she feels no pressure or expectations to live up to what her mother, Diana, and her father, Motown great Berry Gordy, had done in their lives.
No amount of me sitting around lamenting the fact that they had done such big things in their life was going to get me closer to my goal, right? So I just lived my life, and I really believe my siblings have done the same.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Curated. For this week's Song of the Week, we've gone with Everybody Does by 20-year-old Julian Baker. Let me pay through the empty dark. That was Everybody Does by Julian Baker. The Aspen Ideas Festival officially gets started today. Theater Aspen's production of Mamma Mia opens at the Hearst Theater in Rio Grande Park today as well. The Art Base will be hosting an art talk on Thursday. The speakers include current Art Base artists James Searles, Jody Guralnick, and Richard Carter. The opening reception for a photography retrospective from Anderson Ranch opens at the R2 Gallery in Carbondale on Friday. The exhibition includes the pictures from four National Geographic photographers. Blues Traveler plays at the Belly Up on Friday. The first ever Wild West Fermentation Fest starts in Glenwood Springs on Friday. Aspen Brewing Company, Marble Distilling Company, and Woody Creek Distillers are some of the groups attending. Smokey Robinson performs as part of the Jazz Aspen June Experience at the Benedict Music Tent. It's a co-production with the Aspen Music Festival and school. He's a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Xavier Rudd plays at the Snowmass Concert Series on Saturday, after two other outdoor shows on Thursday and Friday. Thievery Corporation performs at the Belly Up on Sunday. The group performs bossa nova-inspired electronic music. Bluegrass Sundays continue at the Sun Deck on top of Aspen Mountain. For a listing of today's major events from the Aspen Music Festival and School, go online to aspenpublicradio.org. This is Curated, a weekly show dedicated to arts and culture. I'm Patrick Ford of the Ed Lisneason Arts and Culture Desk. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.